In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Any day now, the Supreme Court will decide on what to do about the Obamacare subsidies that are being given to people in states where there are no state-run healthcare exchanges. Even though the law specifically says subsidies would only be given through exchanges established by the states, the IRS just changed the rules and decided to give subsidies to everyone no matter where they live. Obamacare proponents have said that if the subsidies are taken away, it could be disastrous for Obamacare. Could this ruling be the beginning of the end of Obamacare? So on today's show, and thank you for joining us, by the way, we'll talk with Grace Marie Turner of the Galen Institute about what the court's potential rulings could mean, but more importantly, we'll talk with her about free market solutions. You know, Obamacare advocates like to say that we need to keep Obamacare because the Republicans haven't come up with a plan to replace it. But this argument assumes that a gigantic, all-encompassing, comprehensive plan is somehow better than a series of strategic plans to deal with specific problems. It implies the healthcare system must be run by the federal government without stopping to ask whether the government should be meddling in your healthcare in the first place. Think of it this way. In any marketplace, the customers and the sellers are the brains of the market. And the really great thing about the free market is that when a transaction takes place, both buyer and seller are better off for having made that transaction. The seller makes a profit, which puts them in a better financial position, and the buyer buys something that has more value to them than if they didn't buy it. That loaf of bread has value because they can feed their family and so on. By coming between buyers and sellers, what Obamacare does is akin to cutting the head off a patient in order to save them. Government will make the decisions, not customers or sellers. Who needs that pesky brain anyway when the government can just decide for you? Before we talk with Grace Marie Turner about Obamacare, I'd like to welcome Nancy Trehearne of the Rogue Valley Republican Women. I'll be speaking at their luncheon next Wednesday, that's June 24th, in Grants Pass about school-based health centers. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You know, for all the talk about healthcare and Obamacare, I find that not a lot of people here in Oregon have ever even heard of school-based health centers. So you guys are already ahead of the curve in that regard. But I'm curious, what alerted you to the issue of school-based health centers in the first place? Are they trying to put one in down in Grants Pass?
We have one in Josephine County already.
Oh, you do already have one. Okay.
Yes, we do.
And is that within Grants Pass or is it somewhere else within the county?
In the Illinois Valley.
Okay.
Cave Junction area. And some of our school board members were not even aware that we had one here.
Oh, interesting. That's very interesting. So what concerns you or the Rogue Valley women, the Rogue Valley Republican women, the most about school-based health centers?
Well, I think one of the things that concerns us the most right now is that House Bill 2758 that Kate Brown will probably be signing here soon that allows doctors to bill parents insurance for any medical procedure that a minor might want without their parents' knowledge or permission.
Well, and not just that, but the implication behind that is that they are having these medical procedures without their parents' knowledge or permission as well.
Yes, and when they can go right on their own campus to go see a medical professional, and parents will have no knowledge of it, so they don't even have to go to their family doctor or off campus. It'll be right there for them.
Right, and the big danger, of course, that shows is the insertion of the state through these school-based health centers. You've got this huge interference then happening between parents and kids.
Correct, yes.
So the event is being held there at the Elmer's Restaurant in Grants Pass. It starts at 11:30, and then I start promptly at noon. I know this is people's lunch hour. How long will I have to speak?
We try to keep it at an hour so that people that are working can get back to work. But we encourage people to stay after if they have more questions and just visit and things like that. So
okay, and is there a cost to attend the event, besides buying your own lunch?
no cost. If you can choose to buy your own lunch or not, some people don't. Also, men are invited. Because we're Republican women, a lot of times men don't think they're invited, but they are always invited. We have a lot of men who attend, a lot of men who are associate members. So public's invited, and I hope that concerned parents, educators, teachers come and find out more about this.
Absolutely. I really do hope people can join us. I mean, like I said, this is something that not a lot of people are aware of. So if you're anywhere near Grants Pass, I promise to make it well worth your time to be there. And just to give kind of a nutshell description, I'll be covering, kind of giving an overview of Oregon's healthcare transformation, what's happened within that, how school-based health centers are a part of that transformation, the dangers that they represent to families, how they get into schools, and most importantly, how to stop them. This presentation that I'll be giving actually led to the Astoria Republican women successfully blocking the school-based health center that they were trying to push into schools up there. So we know that this works. And I will have some time to do some tweaking to my presentation between now and then. Given what I've mentioned so far, is there anything else that your group would specifically like me to address?
I think just bringing this awareness to people, because like you said, so many people have never even heard of this. I think that this is going to be extremely helpful and hopefully get parents involved in their children's education in schools.
Okay, and we do have the event linked up on iSpyRadio.com. Just head to the events tab at the top of the page. If people want to find out more about you or your group, is the best thing to do to point them to the Facebook page, or do you guys have a website?
We do not yet have a website. We were chartered in January, so we're still working on that part.
Well, you know, for just starting in January, you guys are diving into something that's really very important to a lot of families. And like I said, I really hope that people can attend. Nancy, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Mark.
And coming up next, Grace Marie Turner of the Galen Institute. What will happen to Obamacare? And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, keeping an eye on big government. Any day now, the Supreme Court will be issuing its ruling on the Obamacare subsidies. Some people are saying this could be the first step to undoing Obamacare. Others say it's all Republicans' fault. To talk about Obamacare, the Supreme Court decision, and also about some solutions to the mess we find ourselves in as a result of Obamacare, I'd like to welcome now Grace Marie Turner. She is the founder of the Galen Institute, a not-for-profit health and tax policy research organization. Grace Marie, it's an honor to talk to you.
So nice to be with you, Mark. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I said we're in a mess thanks to Obamacare. Is that a fair characterization, or has health care in general and access to health care improved in the last couple of years?
The answer is yes to both. Certainly access to health insurance has improved. The great majority of the people who have received coverage have been enrolled in Medicaid, which is the joint federal state health program, primarily devoted to lower-income Americans, but there are approximately 11 million people who have been enrolled in the Obamacare exchanges, most of them through the infamous healthcare.gov website, where we saw such problems with the rollout. But many of them are in these exchanges because they previously lost their earlier coverage, which no longer was compliant with the mountain of rules and regulations that Obamacare provides. So, yes, more people have access to health insurance. Many of them, though, are very unhappy that they've lost their former coverage, they've lost their doctors, and feel really that they were betrayed because they were told, if you like your health plan, you can keep your health plan, and they learned afterwards that's not true, and they've also, most of them, lost their doctors. And they're also finding, one of the things that I think, Mark, that's very interesting about this law, usually when Congress passes some fast new federal spending program, it takes a long time, but people eventually like it. What we're finding with this law is that almost by a 4-to-1 margin, more people are being harmed by the law than helped by it. And therefore, I think that's why you see that it actually reached one of its lowest popularity ratings in the latest Kaiser Health Policy poll. People are having personal experience with this law, and they don't like it.
Well, that's interesting that so many people are being harmed by this and so many people dislike that. You would think that its proponents, especially the Democrats pushing this, and that are being so resistant to changing it, Why are they not seeing those polls and saying, you know, maybe we're on the wrong side of this issue?
Well, you know, they are seeing the polls. And when you look at the election results, this was passed in March of 2010. In 2010, in 2012, and 2014, you saw a lot of members of Congress who voted for this law that were defeated in their elections. And most of them say it was because of their Obamacare vote.
Interesting. I mentioned that you're with Galen Institute. You're the founder of that. And on your About Us page, oh, and I should mention it's galen.org, G-A-L-E-N. And on your About Us page, it says that you've been instrumental in developing and promoting ideas for reform to transfer power over healthcare decisions to doctors and patients. So is there anything about Obamacare that would actually do that, that gives patients who are the customers in this situation, is there anything about Obamacare that gives patients more power when it comes to healthcare decisions?
It's really hard to make that case. So it is so extraordinarily prescriptive. The law itself is almost 2,000 pages long, and there have been so far at least 30,000 pages of regulation to implement this. And it is really trying to micromanage healthcare from Washington in a way that is just really shocking. And we only see the tip of the iceberg, but we've finding that doctors, for example, are just bailing out. The ones that are not retiring are selling their practices to hospitals because they realize that as independent practices, they're just not able to comply with this mountain of rules and regulations. And consumers are offered basically a choice of four plans, the platinum, the gold, the silver, and the bronze plan. They're basically all the same, but that's really not the kind of choice that people want. And we've done some focus group work that I think really shows what people do want.
Well, what are some of those that they really want?
The focus groups show that people have had it with federal regulation of health insurance. As much as they know there were problems with their states, they want the states to regulate health insurance. They just get it that Washington's one-size-fits-all does not work for them or their states. They believe that if they were able to have more choices of health insurance, that they could decide what kind of policies work for them, what benefits they want. They now get it that they're paying a lot more for health insurance because the health insurance has to be so extraordinarily generous. It is like the government telling us that we all now must drive a car, but that we only drive a car if it's a Rolls Royce. And people are saying, I can't afford that.
Yeah. I think that's what it really comes down to, though, is the matter of choice. And of course, in a free market situation, choice is the foundation of that. The choice of whether or not to buy something is fundamental to driving down prices. And unfortunately, because we're all mandated to buy this, I can't see it ever actually driving down prices. What are your thoughts on that?
That's exactly right. Not only are we pumping now up to $2 trillion more dollars over 10 years into the health sector, which inflates prices because you're not increasing the supply. There are no new doctors. In fact, there are fewer. There are no new hospitals. So you're pumping more money into the system. What does that do? All basic economics tells you that it's going to be increasing prices. And people are seeing that in real time for themselves. And whenever we do these focus groups, the very first thing we hear is health care is too expensive. Health insurance is too expensive. That was a problem before Obamacare. And they now say Obamacare has made it worse, which is why they want to devolve power to the states. And this is actually a program that Congress is working actively on right now. And we may have an opportunity to pass it to give the states a greater chance to reform their health insurance markets, to give people more choice so that they can begin to drive prices down. What we've got right now is we've got basically a Soviet-run regime for one-sixth of our economy. Our health sector represents one-sixth of the economy. They're trying to run it like the Soviet Union. And the rest of the economy, we're saying, look at the kind of choices we have if consumers are in charge, not government bureaucrats.
Yeah, and it is Soviet style. And I think it was Friedrich Hayek that said that government bureaucrats will never be able to make the right decisions when it comes to these kinds of things, because the market itself is a reflection of millions of choices every single day. All right, everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Grace Marie Turner of the Galen Institute. Stay with us. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show, talking today about Obamacare and that imminent Supreme Court ruling that is coming up at pretty much any day now. And to do that, we're talking with Grace Marie Turner. She is one of the foremost critics of Obamacare. And I should mention that you've got a great book out there, Why Obamacare is Wrong for America. Why don't you tell our audience just a little bit about that?
Well, actually, HarperCollins published it, and it pretty much puts it out there. We wrote this book a few months after this legislation passed, looking at the various elements of it and talking about how it's going to affect families and young people, senior citizens, taxpayers, doctors, and physicians. So each chapter is devoted to how it's going to impact. And as I said, we wrote it just a few months after the legislation passed. Virtually everything we've talked about has come to pass. The things that have not have been the things where the president illegally rewrote the law. And we have actually been chronicling the changes he has made. We have on our website at galen.org, as you mentioned, a link to our paper, 51 Changes and Counting to Obamacare. And so where we didn't get it right, it's only because he's illegally rewriting the law.
And those 51 changes and counting, I think that brings up an interesting point, because a lot of people will see those changes and they'll say, why is Congress not doing anything about those changes? Because as we all know, writing the law, that is a job that belongs to Congress. And yet, like you say, he's made 51 changes. So where's Congress in this?
So this is the most bizarre thing. The president, for example, decided that we needed to delay the mandate on employers to provide coverage for their employees. They were really getting huge feedback that the small and medium-sized businesses were cutting hours. They were not creating new jobs. They were cutting jobs because they just couldn't afford the fines and the penalties and the costs of this employer mandate. So the president delayed it. So Congress, the House of Representatives in 2011 said, we think that's a really great idea. We also want to, actually it may have been later than that, but they said this is a great idea. So the House of Representatives passed legislation giving the president legal authority to delay the employer mandate. Not only did Senator Reid never bring it up in the Senate when he controlled the House, Democrats controlled the Senate, but the president issued an executive opinion saying, if this legislation passes, I will veto it. He wants to do this by executive order. Congress is saying, we agree, this law needs to be changed. They had bipartisan support for this change, and the president said he would veto it. Explain that to me.
Wow, how bizarre. What a bizarre situation.
And that has happened over and over. The same thing, the House has passed a repeal of the medical device tax, one of the most onerous and punitive of the 20 taxes in this law. A tax on the revenues of medical device companies. Medical device companies creating joint replaces, everything from syringes to the most complex new joints. And many of them are operating on investor capital. Well, even if they sell one of these products, they have to pay a tax on it, whether or not they made a profit. So yesterday, the House votes to repeal that tax. Again, 50 Democrats joined most Republicans in saying we have to get rid of this tax. It's impeding our ability to compete internationally in this industry. The president said he'd veto it.
Like I said, the Supreme Court decision is imminent. But before we go there, though, I'd like to come back to something that you said in the last segment, and it has to do with this notion of basic economics, because the proponents for this will say that, just to reiterate what I had said earlier, is that the choice whether or not to buy something is fundamental to the price of that item or service. But the proponents of this will say, if you don't buy insurance, you're going to end up costing everybody more money. So what are your thoughts on that? Because obviously people need health care. Obviously people need a way to pay for that. So what's the solution? If you don't impose the mandate on people, what is the incentive for people to then buy insurance?
Well, right now is a big incentive for people to not buy insurance because it's so extraordinarily expensive because of all the benefit mandates that the administration requires. But when the first Supreme Court challenge to Obamacare in 2012, the Galen Institute actually submitted an amicus brief addressing that very issue. Would we really significantly be able to eliminate a lot of these excessive costs of people showing up at hospital emergency rooms and not being able to pay? Would that significantly reduce the premiums and the cost for everybody else? And we found that the cost was really marginal. An estimated, it's a lot of money, $42 billion a year, but that's out of a $2.8 trillion health sector economy. So it's far less than 5%. So it's just not going to move the needle. What we need to do is really have a new philosophy of, as you said, how do we get consumers engaged? How do we create a true market in the health sector? Which doesn't mean that when somebody is wheeled into an emergency room on a gurney, that the doctor leans over and starts consulting with them with, you know, what can you afford? It's the kind of insurance protection that you have if that happens. That's the kind of thing that people not only can decide, but want to decide for themselves. What do they want their deductible to be? How narrow or broad a network of physicians do they want to have in their health plan? What benefits do they want covered? People can make those decisions for themselves, and they want insurance, but they want insurance they can afford. Yeah. And right now, they can't afford the Obamacare insurance.
Well, and a lot of people want that catastrophic care, that's to me is the real reason for insurance is to cover those extraordinary expenses that, you know, you just can't predict or plan for. But instead, that's just not even an option. You have to buy health care for everything, even contraceptives and so on. All right. We will be talking about that Supreme Court ruling that's coming up. Stay with us. We'll have more with Grace Marie Turner of the Galen Institute. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, talking today to Grace Marie Turner. She is one of the foremost critics of Obamacare, has a great book out there, Why Obamacare is Wrong for America. And her foundation, or institute, I should say, is the Galen Institute. Great website. They, in fact, have a really fantastic project that they have put out there. It's called ObamacareWatch.org. If you're interested in keeping an eye on Obamacare, that is absolutely the website for you. It is very easy to find information. Grace Marie, I'd really like to compliment you guys on that. It's kind of like the Drudge Report, but for Obamacare.
Oh, I'm so glad. That's exactly what we were trying to achieve. Thank you very much. So, you know, we sort of get away from everything that's not health care, in fact, really everything that's not Obamacare, and try to give people who really want to find out what's going on one place they can go. So thank you so much, Mark. We've worked hard on it, ObamacareWatch.org.
Yeah, great website. So we were talking about basic economics, and before we get to the Supreme Court ruling, there's still something else that I'd like to talk about, because it really seems like, you know, there's a lot of smart people on the left, and yet you hear somebody like Gruber that says, oh, well, the American people are stupid and so on. And so they're trying to impose this government run program on people. And of course, free market advocates are saying, well, you can lower price by giving people choices, by actually removing government. And yet the left says, no, we're going to impose government. You have to buy this. And they really believe that that will somehow drive down price. And one of their drivers is they believe that by forcing more people into the system, this will somehow lower prices. Can that approach ever work?
It hasn't worked, because what they do is by forcing people into the system, they say, well, we have to have subsidies for this because people can't afford this expensive insurance that we're mandating that they buy. So you have a lot of new taxes. You have young people paying much higher prices sometimes yeah. 3 or 4 times higher prices for their coverage, so older people can pay less, basically socializing the cost of health insurance, yeah. keeping the consumer from knowing how much anything costs full price, their health insurance or their health care. It is absolutely no wonder everybody is operating in the dark here. Even to ask a doctor, how much does this cost? They don't know. They have yeah. no idea what their costs are.
Yes, and that is a great point because, again, when you're talking free market situations, you need to understand what it actually costs in order to make an informed decision about whether or not you want to buy something.
Exactly. And
yet nobody seems to know what it actually costs when they go to the doctor because there are so many different you've got tax credits that go into this. You've got all these subsidies that go into it. You've got copays. And so you don't, when you're handed that bill, you know, you see $20, but the actual cost is far higher than that. And so because you don't understand what the price is of a service such as healthcare, that means you don't understand the value of that.
Right. And what hospitals have done, for example, is to massively inflate the cost. You know, they will put on the bill, you know, an aspirin is $10. Well, why do they do that? It's because they have to so heavily discount their prices for insurance companies and government payers that they want to have a very high price against which to dictate to discount their costs. But what that means is that somebody who walks in and says, well, I'm ready to pay full price, winds up getting completely shafted because they're not able to afford these extraordinary prices. So the prices, even when there are set prices, are completely ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, let's go ahead and turn now to the Supreme Court, because anytime perhaps before the end of this month, the Supreme Court is going to decide whether or not the IRS illegally extended subsidies to millions of Americans to pay for the cost of their health insurance policies that they are forced to buy under Obamacare. And the language of the law says that these subsidies will be awarded in states that set up their own exchange, but about 36 states opted not to do that. Despite that, the IRS went ahead and gave subsidies to one and all. What is your prediction in terms of course, it's always hard to make a prediction when it comes to the Supreme Court lately. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think the Supreme Court is going to find in favor of the IRS, or what are you expecting?
Well, I'm a policy person, not a lawyer, and I learned in 2012 that it's very difficult to predict yes. what the Supreme Court's going to do. And I've talked, though, with a number of people, Mark, who, in fact, most recently was somebody who plays poker with some of the justices, and they said that, you know, you wish that the justices would make their decision based clearly on the law. And if
yes.
they were to do that, it's very clear that the Obama administration rewrote the law in order to allow subsidies in the states that did not create their own exchanges. The law explicitly says, as Jonathan Gruber, MIT professor, has pointed out, that you only get your subsidies if your state sets up an exchange. Well, only about 14 or 15 did. And so that meant that Obamacare was just simply not going to be implemented in those other states. And so what did they do? They had the IRS write a rule saying, well, we've decided that you can get the subsidies whether or not your state sets up an exchange. So that's really what's before the Supreme Court. So if the Supreme Court were to make the decisions based simply on the rule of law, I don't think there's any question that they would side with the petitioners and say that the government was wrong. But there are a lot of different ways they can thread that needle. One of the things we learned in 2012 is that the justices were very concerned about being responsible for 30 million people not getting health insurance, because that's what the promises were at the time. And so that's one of the reasons that we believe Supreme Court Justice John Roberts changed his vote at the very end. It was a 5-4 decision. He flipped, saying, yes, it's unconstitutional for the federal government to require everybody to purchase health insurance, but they could basically make it an option and tax you if you don't. So that's how he threaded that needle. But the pressure came from worried about the political repercussions. And so this time, the Congress is saying, okay, we get it. We are going to provide you the space to make the decision based upon the merits by making sure you know we're ready to act to take care of the people that would be impacted by the decision.
Yeah, and that has been in the news lately that Congress has offered some solutions. There's several different types of bills that are out there. One, of course, is just basically to extend these for the next couple of years, I think until after the 2016 election, when they can hopefully get a Republican president in there and essentially do away with this entirely. But what does it mean if they do? Actually, I'm getting a signal from my producer. We are up against breaks, so stay with us. We'll have more on the Supreme Court's imminent decision with Grace Marie Turner of the Galen Institute. And welcome back. We're talking about Obamacare on the iSpy Radio Show. And to do that, we are talking with Grace Marie Turner. She is the founder of the Galen Institute, which advocates for free market healthcare reform. Their website, if you'd like to go visit that, is galen.org, G-A-L-E-N.org. While you're there, be sure to check out ObamacareWatch.org as well. Absolutely fantastic site, news aggregator for all things Obamacare. And we're talking about the Supreme Court. And so what does it mean over the long term, if they do strike this down? I know where Republicans have some solutions, so to speak, in terms of keeping the subsidies. But let's say that they do strike it down. Do you think that this is really the first step in doing away with Obamacare?
Absolutely. And those 37 states, not only do the subsidies go away, but also the mandates that the employers must provide coverage are eliminated, which I think is going to really energize their help their business sector. But also individuals, most individuals will no longer be subject to the individual mandate penalty. So some of the major provisions of this law would no longer be valid in those 34 to 37 states. Three states tried to set up an exchange, really failed. And so it's a question of whether or not they'd have considered several state or federal exchanges, but 34 to 37 states.
Yeah, we don't know much about failed exchanges here in Oregon. Ours was a colossal failure.
Colossal failure. I know. I've actually written a column for Forbes. You might want to link to that.
Yeah.
That talks in detail about the calamity of the Oregon Exchange, which was really a victim of politics, much more than of the of software. Oracle actually figured out how to ultimately make the software work, but because the administration had taken so much heat for this website, they basically didn't ever get it started, defaulted at the federal exchange, and tossed away $300 million of taxpayer money.
Yeah, it has been astronomical, and unfortunately, Oregon is once again leading the nation in terms of what not to do. Certainly when it comes to these health exchanges. In terms of the Supreme Court striking this down, the Obama administration has hinted that they will only accept a fix that removes those four words as enacted by the states. And so they're standing firm that everybody has to get these subsidies. So we're headed, it seems, for another political showdown. Do you think the Republicans this time and some Democrats, do you think they'll have the spine to stand up to Obama?
The Congress will not pass a bill that will simply reinstate the subsidies. Senator Barrasso of Wyoming has said that we will pass a four-word bill, but it will have to say, we must repeal Obamacare. Not the president wants. But the Congress has been working literally for months on a solution that will make sure that those 6.4 million people are able to continue to keep their coverage, to get new choices of state-approved plans, and to not have to be under the Obamacare regime. They could escape the mandates, the benefit regulations, while still keeping their coverage. It's going to be hard, I think, for Democrats in those federal exchange states to vote against a reasonable replacement. I'm hoping that we might even be able, the president may veto it. It's possible we could get a majority to override the president's veto.
That would be shocking if that happened. But again, I just hope that we're not coming up to another showdown when Republicans knuckle under and bow to Obama.
They're not going to do it. I mean, look how many of them were elected because of their opposition to Obamacare. They can't simply say, well, as actually, unfortunately, some of the proposals in the Senate basically say, well, let's just extend the Obamacare subsidies until August of 2017 when we have a new president in place. There's just no way House Republicans can vote for that, because that's saying we don't have a better idea than Obamacare, and they do have a better idea. We can talk about that if you like, but it's a very positive proposal that returns power to individuals and through their states rather than through this gigantic federal mountain of regulation. Let states make decisions, and people now get it that they have more power and control over getting policies approved by their states that allow them to pick the kind of health insurance they want, not what Washington is telling them they must have.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about that. What are some of the solutions that are out there? It seems to me Republicans are often faulted for not having a solution to Obamacare, but I think that's a sort of a straw man argument, because what they're actually trying to say, accuse Republicans of, is they don't have one gigantic all-encompassing replacement for Obamacare, which means that we have to control this by the government. The government has to be deeply involved in all of this, but that runs against what most Republicans believe.
Mark, that's exactly right. The Republicans do not have a better idea for another 2,000-page bill.
Yes.
That exerts Washington control over our health sector. What they want to do is pass, as Speaker Boehner has been doing, a series of targeted bills, not only to repeal, but also to begin to replace. And the slogan that we're developing for this new next step is Washington repeals, states replace. And I think that really says it all, that the states are the ones who really can make decisions about what kind of health insurance people want. The focus group work we've done, the polling we've done says, yes, that they want people to take, they want Congress to take care of those 6.4 million people that would lose their coverage, but don't do it in such a way that destroys the coverage of everybody else. The only way you're going to be able to do that is by giving states the resources to continue those subsidies, but to do it in a way that gives people many more choices and gets rid of these expensive, onerous Obamacare mandates.
Okay, we're up against a break here. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Grace Marie Turner wrapping things up and be talking about some more of the solutions that are out there. Her website, again, if you'd like to go visit that, is galen.org. Stay with us. And welcome back. It's all about Obamacare today on the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Grace Marie Turner. She is one of the foremost critics of Obamacare. Absolutely fantastic institute, the Galen Institute, which advocates for free market healthcare reform. Their website, one more time, galen.org. And, of course, we'll make sure that we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. And, you know, going into the break there, you're talking about essentially doing away with Obamacare and returning power to the states. But I think some people may ask the same question that I have, is that, well, aren't you then running the danger of having, instead of one gigantic monster, you've got 50 little monsters, and isn't that just as bad?
One of the things that Congress is considering, and we'll see if this can make it through the legislation, that you determine how much have the people in specific states under this federal regime been getting in subsidies. Then you provide basically a block grant to the states in that amount. The states then are required to set up an individual account for the people that are currently getting coverage. So it becomes kind of a defined contribution account, more like an IRA, but it can only be used to purchase health insurance. And then people would have the choice of any policy approved by their states, free of the Obamacare mandates and expensive regulations. So people would have more choice, and they would have the resources to be able to support the purchase of that policy. Just as with Obamacare, it's not going to cover the whole thing, but many of the Obamacare policies have $10,000 deductibles for a family, and that's the amount of money they have to spend every year before their insurance kicks in. Yeah. They're not going to be able to do that. They want more affordable policies. They may want a $10,000 deductible policy, but they want to pay much less for it, and maybe they want to put the savings from that policy into a health savings account to help them with their routine medical expenses and allow that money to accrue and to roll over from year to year. So there are just as many different ways as you and I could ever think of, and probably many more, about how insurance could be structured if the market were able to respond to the needs of consumers rather than to dictates from Washington.
Well, and the market responding to the consumers, again, it comes down to, I think in my mind, is doing away with the individual mandate where you have to buy it. Whenever I think about that, I think about an experience from my youth when I had was on the verge of getting my driver's license, but my family had a policy that if you got your driver's license, you had to pay for your own insurance. And I lived in New York State where driving insurance, car insurance was mandatory. You had to have it in order to get on the road. And then right across the border was Pennsylvania, where you did not have to have insurance. Of course, it made sense to get insurance, but it wasn't mandated by the state that you had to get it. The insurance policies in New York State cost almost five times what it costs in Pennsylvania for an insurance policy. So if we get away from the mandate, do you see prices dropping again?
Absolutely. I think the mandate has been part of the whole structure of Obamacare.
Sure.
When they mandated coverage, they had to mandate that people buy not only the coverage but this expensive coverage, which then led to the subsidies, which then led to all of the government regulations, which then led to the IRS tax penalties. So there's a whole chain that comes from this individual mandate. You get rid of that. What you want to do is figure out how do you make health insurance more affordable so that people want to buy it. And yes, you're going to have to provide help for people at the lower end of the income scale. But we see a lot of changes happening in the market now trying to respond to consumers despite all the Obamacare rules and regulations. Consumers know they need health care. They want to be able to have more control over their choices. They know they need, as you said earlier, protection against those catastrophic medical expenses. But the market needs to respond with more affordable choices so that people have the choices that they want to purchase rather than they're required to purchase.
Yeah, and that's a great point. The fact that people know they need this, I mean, anybody that any normal consumer would know that it is far better to have insurance for these kinds of things. But again, if they can't afford it, then they may as well not have it.
Yes, that's exactly right. And they can't afford even the deductible they might. I mean, people say that with a $10,000 deductible, they're literally walking out of hospitals when they find out that they're going to have to pay the first $10,000 before they get their $50,000 shoulder replacement surgery. They said, I can't afford that. Literally walk out of the hospital.
And we only got about a minute here with you. Just real quick, you had mentioned that there were some misconceptions about some of the plans out there. Can you address that real quick?
Well, I think that there's a real sense that Republicans are going to do more damage than Obamacare has done with their replacement strategies, and that's just ridiculous. If the same analyst had taken a careful look at what Obamacare has done and been honest about that, they would have seen how damaging that was going to be to our health sector and to our economy. What we need to do is a targeted replacement for these 6.4 million people, returning power to the states and individuals, and beginning on that postage stamp to begin to create a real free market. I think it's going to be a very, very positive solution.
Well, it'll certainly be interesting to see that some of the solutions that develop out of this and, of course, how the market responds to it, because that is, of course, the basis for free market.
Yes.
I want to thank you for your time today. Grace Marie Turner of the Galen Institute. Her book, one more time, is Why Obamacare is Wrong for America. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mark. Pleasure to be with you.
You know, a lot of today's show has been on the economics of Obamacare and free market principles. As I was listening to Grace Marie, I couldn't help but think how much time and energy and money have all been spent these last 6 years on fixing healthcare. If only that much effort had been putting into removing barriers to job creation, removing regulations that prevent employers from hiring new people, or that punish them when they do, America would be in a far, far better place. More people would have access to health care, either through their jobs or because they'd be able to afford it. And all that would be happening without passing along the cost to taxpayers. Plus, you'd have more taxpayers. You know what I remember about the Reagan boom years? I remember people not being so worried about how they'd afford health care. Funny how that works. Time for me to get going. You can download and share today's show from iSpyRadio.com starting Monday at noon. Because like we say every week, the best information is you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.